1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here on the Tuesday edition of the program, Loyola Chicago. Beat down Illinois. We'll have all of it in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Brandy Mueller, former NFL GM and formerly Ryan Pace's boss. We talk with him about what the Bears are doing here in free agency, some national NFL news, and his amazing career as an NFL executive. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. If you're a local small business owner, you know how important it is to be there for your customers. State Farm agent Brian McDevitt runs a small business in Downers Grove, too, and he's here to help you protect your small business. Call Brian today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Visit his website, RyanIsMyAgent.com. That's RyanIsMyAgent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. It's called March Madness for a reason. Not the Super Bowl, not the NBA, not even baseball, not even the World Series. It's truly unpredictable. And that's why I prefer March Madness to the NBA, hands down. I genuinely don't know who's going to win March Madness. I could have told you from day one in the NBA who would be in the finals at the end of the year. Easily. Anybody can. Lakers, great example. LeBron went down. Anthony Davis went down. If they come back healthy before the playoffs start, they're winning. They could be an 8 seed. They're going to win. And as we all know, it'll be billed as, wow, what an upset. The 8-seeded Lakers won the NBA Finals. First time in history. That's a joke. And we all know that. March Madness is fun. It's unpredictable. We don't know what's going to happen with any team. Oral Roberts, great example. Abilene Christian, another example. These are teams that you probably haven't heard of. And they're winning. And they're in the Sweet 16. And who knows, they could be in the Final Four. You didn't expect that. That's why I never fill out a bracket. Never. I'm done. I'd rather enjoy the madness, enjoy the tournament, and sit there and lament over my broken bracket. You may think you have a chance to fill out a perfect one. This year proved that's impossible. Nothing wrong with that, but it's a fact. You're never going to fill out a perfect bracket. And here in Chicago specifically, I guarantee you nobody filled out a perfect bracket. Not after what we saw this past weekend. It brought me so much joy to see Illinois go down. All year, They've been hyping up Illinois all year. Number one seed, national champion. Better than the Darren Williams and Luther Head Days. You got to be kidding me. I remember it was a couple of weeks ago, and they put out a picture. They posed like Darren Williams and Luther Head. And they replicated them, put them side by side, and said, look, it's the future. No, it's not. No, it's not. And I found that insulting. I remember watching that Illinois team. I remember Darren Williams and Luther Head. That team is 10 times better than this one today. Why do we have so much recency bias? This is ridiculous. And all year I heard the comparisons. Everybody's saying this team is different. This one's better. No, it isn't. Nope. I was so happy to see this go this way. Nothing against Illinois, but it is against the people who insinuated and commented all year long that this team was great. Went viral a couple of days ago. One of the analysts on CBS said Illinois is not cut out to win. And everybody tore him up. I remember I saw it on Twitter. He said, I don't know about this team. And everybody said, have you watched any games? Is this guy an idiot? No. And I understand with the tournament, oh, it's one day. Maybe not the better team overall, but on that day they were. I don't care. If you're supposedly this amazing team, you're better, or you think you're better than that 2005 team, then there's no reason why you should lose to a number 8 seed. Right? There's no reason. All the celebrating, everybody already saying they'd be a national champion, hold your horses. No. Want to know the best part? Loyola could actually win it all. They actually have a path. The 8 seed, right? The team that's horrible. Supposedly, according to the NCAA. Illinois is a great team. Let's buy into the media hype and make them a number one seed. Hey, did you see that? They're recreating the 2005 team. How fun. What a nice gimmick. That's what this team is. They're a knockoff. They're a gimmick. They're nothing. They're unoriginal. I have no mercy in saying that. I don't feel bad about saying that. It's a fact. A couple of weeks ago, wouldn't have been right to say it, but at this point, it's pretty obvious to everybody. You could be a fan. You could be happy they went to where they did, but the fact is, they're not going anywhere. It's over. I don't feel bad about that. It's the truth. They have a couple of talented players. The NBA could be calling for them. And that's great. At the end of the day, that's what the whole purpose of this is anyway. But for those who insinuated all year that this team was better than 2005, best Illinois team ever, number one seed, yeah, not so much. And I don't feel bad about saying it. It's a fact. Loyola is the better team. They won fair and square. Illinois had chances, and they couldn't do it. That's one reason I do not like the tournament. They undervalue teams every year, the tournament. Every single year. Loyola should not be an 8 seed. And Illinois shouldn't be a 1 seed. That's a fact. But because of the media and the hype, and the strong Illini fan base, especially around here, everyone bought in, and they were all bamboozled. That's what you get when you insinuate that you're better than Illinois' best team. That's what you get when you pull off marketing gimmicks and try and be cocky. What a joke. This team being better than Darren Williams and Luther Head and that squad. Give me a break. You deserve to lose for insinuating that. You deserve to lose. If I have no mercy, I don't feel bad at all. Loyola is the better team. Hats off to Illinois. Played a great game. Had a great year. I'm happy. But I knew from the very beginning, this team is not better. Not better than that one. Darren Williams, Luther Head. No way. No way. And it hurt me all year to see those comparisons and see people insinuate that and say that. Now we all know. I hope. I hope we know. I hope it's apparent. They're a talented squad. A couple of guys will go to the NBA. Great. Good team. I understand it. But at the end of the day, the fact is they lost to an 8 seed when they were a 1 seed. They were overvalued. There was media hype all day long about them. And they couldn't come through. I don't feel bad in saying any of this. It's a fact. It's a fact what I'm saying. Good for Loyola. I'm so happy they won. It silenced everybody who made outlandish claims about this Illinois team. That's why I'm happy. And Loyola has a great path to victory. They actually do. Face Oregon State, 12 seed, in the Sweet 16. Then they'll face the winner of Syracuse and Houston. They could be in the Final Four again. Seriously. They could actually make it again. As long as Cam Krutwig plays like he did, especially against Illinois, 19 points, 12 rebounds, they'll be fine. They'll make it. I'm really happy for this team. And I'm really happy for this win. Everyone scoffed at Loyola. They did, seriously. No money, no talent. Wait a minute. Wait. You think they're going to beat Illinois? You're crazy. They did. They did. And that's the beauty of March Madness. You could be a school with money galore. You could have this athletic fund and this endowment. State school, state funding, whatever it might be. Best talent. But at the end of the day, heart wins. The attributes that we talk about in sports. Heart. Courage, effort. That's how you win. Simple. Money does not become a problem. Endowment, training facilities, all this cool stuff that means nothing. Once we get to the tournament every year, that stuff doesn't matter. That's why I was happy Loyola won. Illinois had more fans, more money, objectively, more talent. And they still lost. Media hype. Number one seed, they still lost. Even if you're an Illinois fan, you have to admit, that's the beauty of the tournament. That's the beauty of March Madness. Any team, any day could win. A 16 seed, theoretically, could win the whole tournament. A 16 seed could win the whole tournament. Abilene Christian is a 14 seed. They're still alive. They're still going. Loyola, an 8 seed, is in the Sweet 16. That's the beauty of March Madness. That's why I prefer it, truthfully, to the NBA. We don't know who the winner's going to be. I could have told you day one who's going to be in the finals for the NBA. And all these storylines that we see about the association day in and day out, it's just hype to keep it relevant. None of it matters. At the end of the day, we know who's going to be there. Not here. Not in March Madness. And this weekend, Loyola and Illinois proved it. It hit close to home for many people. This is why the tournament is played. This is why people care about it. It's unpredictable. And some random team with no money, no cool stuff, could still win and take it to you, too. So I hope this serves as a lesson, especially to Illinois fans. Want to sit here and compare your team to Luther Head and Darren Williams? Take gimmick photo shoots and idolize them? Replicate them? Say, oh, look at the similarities. How cool. You got what you deserved. Word of warning, don't be arrogant. Don't be cocky. Won't get you anywhere. Play your heart out. Show effort. That's a life lesson. Show effort. Don't enter something thinking, I've already won. Because when you do that, 9 times out of 10, you're going down. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Randy Mueller comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. Must be 21 plus, must be an Illinois resident. You can bet $250 free on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. Loyola is still alive. They're still going. Here's a great time to put down some money on them because they have a good chance to get to the Final Four. I could see it. At sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Talk Chicago. Here with John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the CEO of MuellerFootball.com, host of the Football GM podcast, and the 2000 NFL Executive of the Year. Please welcome Randy Mueller to the program. Randy, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me to join you guys. Looking forward to a little visit.
Randy, have you ever seen a quarterback carousel like this before?
Pretty crazy, that's for sure. I think What should we expect in the year of COVID, you know? all kind of chaos. And, you know, the chaos, that's the position that really runs the league. That's what makes it intriguing for us all. So the answer to your question is no, I've not seen anything like it, and I'm not sure we will again.
Did you experience anything similar when you were a GM?
No, I've thought back about this several times, and I can't, you know, I cannot recall any time when these kind of chess pieces were even being talked about, much less being traded. We're talking about some of the best players in the league and obviously at the highest profile position in the league. It's just crazy the type of dynamics that one team will swallow to, you know, move a guy for whatever reason. I mean, you go back to what the Rams and Eagles have done with their quarterbacks, the amount of cap room that they've chewed up now in dead money with players that aren't on their team, it's, you know, obviously unprecedented. So I think that's the big thing going forward is used to be the cap would say, no chance. Now we're saying, well, maybe not no, but let's talk about it. You know, just the fact that we're even considering some of these moves, I think makes it unprecedented.
Why do you think that's changed? Like what changed from your days to today to allow that stuff to happen?
I think cap economics has always been a little bit feared by football people. I think they have always wanted more accountability, and the cap kind of held us all accountable. I think now the cap and the ramifications that these two teams are going to find out, and two teams, I'm talking about the Rams and Eagles per se, because they're the ones that have set precedent here. it'll be interesting to follow them the next couple of years to see if this is a one-off or if this becomes a trend. I still think it's kind of in the one-off category. I just don't see teams willing to do this. The amount of cash that those teams laid out to those players that are gone, cap is one thing, but we all know cash is king. Cash to those teams just doesn't seem to mean as much as it does to some of the other markets, mid-market teams. So we'll see. It sure makes for interesting observation and really a great science project going forward if we were kids, you know?
For those who don't know, what's the offseason like? How many phone calls did you make, and how did you end up maneuvering some of the trades you did?
Well, my philosophy always was to be in the middle of every deal. Paul Allen told me that years ago in Seattle, and his people, once they bought our team in Seattle, they kind of said, hey, we like to be aggressive. We want to be involved in everything. We can always say no at the end of the deal. That was a license for me to really do my job, and I enjoyed it. I think this year is really crazy because it's more players available in a pool than ever before. So I would think that those phone calls are nonstop. They were when I was a GM. I mean, we always were on the phone spending time. I want to discuss everything because we're going to build consensus. Plus, I'm always going to answer the phone because I'm not dumb enough to think that other guys don't have great ideas. So I may not have all the ideas. So by talking to everybody, you kind of can expand your own mind and get somebody else's ideas and see if it doesn't work for you. So I would always be on the phone, as I'm sure these guys are today. I think a guy like Joe Douglas is in a fascinating spot with New York this year. With the second pick and the amount of cap room he has, I can't imagine that he's got 20, 30, 40 deals in his mind at all times. I know I would. And that deal-making hat would be rolling. And I think they're kind of a test tube in this offseason. The Jets, I see no reason they can't be a playoff team. And if they're not, it's because they haven't done their homework and haven't done a good job retooling.
Would you say that's the most likely destination for Deshaun Watson right now?
No, because I don't think Deshaun's going to be traded. I've said that from day one, and I feel steadfast that that's not going to happen. I think they will sit on that deal, and if they did move him, I think they're a year away from moving him. That deal that he has signed is going to prevent him, I think, from putting down his foot because there are major financial ramifications, guarantees with the rest of his long-term contract that would all disappear if he doesn't play this year. So I think we'll see the pendulum slip back a little bit in the favor of the Texans if they indeed don't want to trade him. So I don't see that happening. I think the Jets are going to be involved in every deal. And the fascinating part of it is it starts with, do we keep Sam Darnold or do we keep the second pick and draft Zach Wilson? I think that's where it all starts for them.
Randy Mueller here on Sports Talk Chicago. So, Randy, what could the Bears do at quarterback right now? If Watson could be out of the question, do you buy the Russell Wilson hype?
I don't. Again, that's a deal where I think Russell's agent has been doing all the talking. I think Seattle has said they'll open, haven't said anything, but obviously their phone lines are open. But you're talking about a close to 70-year-old head coach in Seattle in Pete Carroll. I just can't see the answer at quarterback for them appearing out of nowhere. And that's what it would take to trade Russell Wilson. I just don't think they're going to start over or even adjust. Pete Carroll's in the twilight, right? He might have 2 or 3 years left. I just don't see them moving off Russell Wilson. The Super Bowl window is open for them. And a trade of that magnitude would kind of take that window away, in my opinion, because there would definitely be a period of adjustment. And I don't know where they find another Russell Wilson. So I don't think that's real. I think the Bears can try to, you know, produce a package in their own mind that might get their attention. If it's crazy enough, you know, maybe John Snyder begs Pete to make a deal, but I just don't see that happen. I just don't think it's realistic.
How much is too much for Watson or Wilson?
Well, I've heard the rumors of the three first-round picks, and I think in Chicago's case, you know, they're in a tough spot. They're going to make, you know, some decisions now because of the status of the GM and the head coach, and they're going to make some desperate decisions. And I'm not sure that's good for the franchise in the long haul. I surely would take a call that included three first round picks, I guess. But, you know, anything beyond that is kind of crazy, and that might be crazy in the end. But I don't see that being enough. So I guess they got to keep putting the package together and try to get somebody's attention.
Have you ever been in a position like this before, like in Ryan Pace's case, doing everything he can to save his job and probably mortgaging a lot of the future just to stay in power?
Yeah, no, that's a tough spot. I do not envy Ryan, and I've known him since he was a kid. You know, he was our intern in New Orleans when I was a GM, so I've known him since he even got into the league. He's definitely in a tough spot. I think they swung and missed on quarterbacks, and that's the risk you take when you make a bold move like he did on Trubisky, you know, and then they even swung and missed, in my opinion, on Foles. So, you know, maybe third strike is a charm, third time's a charm. I don't know. It's definitely a tough spot when your franchise is you know, banking on every move you make. The agenda of the decision maker is definitely in the mix, and that puts him in a tough spot for sure.
How do you feel about Mitch Trubisky? Could he still find success in the NFL, do you think?
I think it's going to be hard. I think the system he would have to function in kind of limits the overall package that offense can run, and I felt like that's what kind of happened with the Bears. When they dialed things back and put it in his hands, it was like playing with one arm behind their hand, behind their back, and that made it really hard to function and spread the field. And NFL defenses are really good, right? They tend to find ways to combat offenses that aren't complete. And I felt like the Bears weren't a complete offense when he was in there. I just don't think that's an appetite that other teams are going to share, you know, a liking for us. So maybe as a backup, I just don't see him as a starter next year. That's for sure.
What caused his downfall? Was it a lack of skill or bad coaching or both?
I think in his case, he's a great kid. I think the body of work at North Carolina wasn't very much. I think if you study that itself, he played behind a couple quarterbacks that were not NFL quarterbacks, and he didn't beat them out there. So I felt like that 1 year of work that he had, you know, people saw the pluses. They didn't see the things that held him back. And I just don't think that there was a complete evaluation. Most teams didn't have him up where the Bears took him. Let me just say that. So, you know, I think the evaluation process itself kind of led them astray. And that's a tough spot when you give up picks to get him. And that kind of money's involved makes for a tough marriage if all the skill set isn't there. I just didn't see a complete skill set with Mitch when he came out.
Would you have drafted him?
Oh, not where they picked him, that's for sure. I mean, gosh, there was, I don't think I have to be a revisionist in history to tell you the two names of other quarterbacks that were in that draft as well. So I won't bring that up, but we all liked Mitch, don't get me wrong, but we didn't like him up there, that's for sure.
Where could he go if you had to guess? A certain team either as a backup or maybe a starter?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a place like San Francisco where Kyle Shanahan does favor a little bit of an athletic quarterback who can make some things happen outside the pocket, but you've also still got to survive in the pocket. I could see him ending up in a place like that in a backup role for sure. Again, it's all about the system and the fit.
What about realistically for the Bears? What will they do come next season? Who's their quarterback going to be?
You know, I think they've got to continue to beat the bushes. They've got to shake every tree that's out there. I don't know what's going to happen with Jameis Winston. I think he's got a tough decision to make. Everybody says the Saints want him back, but that's in a position to compete with Taysom Hill. And we all know Sean Payton has kind of adopted Taysom Hill as his guy. So I don't know how Jameis trusts that situation. They also, the one I mentioned is what are the Jets going to do? I mean, they've got Sam Darnold sitting there. They've got a chance to draft a quarterback really high. I think that's a possibility. Where does Sam Darnold go? That, I would think, would have to interest the Bears. I had a chance to study Sam Darnold when he came out, and I've looked at a ton of film recently with the Jets, and I think I can explain his downfall. So, for me, Sam Darnold is still a viable option.
What is his downfall?
I think a lot of it is the fact that at SC, he ran kind of an archaic system. It was not one that asked him to process a lot of information, didn't give him a lot of answers. At the Jets, that was a bad team the last couple of years. They're throwing to half of last season. He's throwing to neighbor kids, in my opinion. They just didn't have NFL players. So that makes it a hard way to develop when you don't have the skill sets around you. So I think in an offense that gives you more answers and with better players, he stands a good chance to show upside. I still watch tape on him, and there's two or three throws a game that I say, wow, Sam Darnold's got it. It's just not on a consistent basis.
But do you think the Bears could provide that with Matt Nagy and with the weapons they have right now?
Well, I haven't seen that. That's the tough spot.
Right.
I haven't seen that offense operate at a level that hey, you want to go there for one as a quarterback, and two, what they've done defensively, I guess that's the biggest selling point they have, is to sell the defense to a quarterback that might come in there. So I don't know. That's a tough spot. And I'm coming back to that several times in our discussion, but I'm just not sure about the Bears and their direction on offense. What if I'm buying or selling, you know?
More to come with Brandy Mueller in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Brandy Mueller, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Brandy, I wanted to also talk about your career for a moment. You started with the Seahawks before going to the Saints, Dolphins, Chargers, and the XFL, too. Tell me about your journey through football and how you made it to where you are now.
Well, it was a fun journey, that's for sure. I hadn't given it a lot of thought. I grew up in a little logging town in northern Idaho, 2,000 people, and became one summer when I was in high school a ball boy for the Seahawks. And to wake up 17 or 18 years later as the boss was kind of a crazy period of time. I guess it's testament that if you keep your mouth shut and keep ducking behind your desk, pretty soon they got to keep you because you're doing all the dirty work. That's kind of how it worked out there. I stayed in Seattle when Mike Holmgren came from Green Bay. We won the division in Holmgren's first year in Seattle, and then went on to the Saints as their GM and Miami as the GM as well with Nick Saban. So I spent 10 years after that as the national scout for the Chargers. So it's been a good run for me. I've enjoyed it. I always say, hey, it beats working for a living, and it gave me 35 years in the NFL.
What initially got you into the front office? Why were you interested in it, and how'd you get in?
I really don't know that I'd given it a bunch of thought. I had worked for the Seahawks three or four summers when I graduated from college, and I had actually another year of eligibility to play. I went to a little school in Oregon, Linfield College, and my last year there, we'd won the national championship, and I was a starting quarterback, and I had planned on coming back another year because I had redshirted early in my career. But the Seahawks offered me a full-time job in scouting, and so I wasn't sure I wanted to do it until my head coach in college said, hey, everybody on my staff wants this job. You have to take it. So I ended up leaving and into a full-time job with the Seahawks as an assistant in the pro scouting department and just kind of learned the business from the ground up. I think that's the missing link in real business life anymore, right? Nobody starts at the bottom and learns it from the bottom up. And that's what I'm probably most proud of, is that I kind of learned it the right way. And it's served me well throughout the last three or four decades.
What's the most memorable moment in your career?
Oh, I think the crowning moment for me was in Seattle. One year we had, and this kind of comes at Chicago's expense, you know, we traded Rick Meyer to the Bears for a first round pick. And we had, I believe it was picks either 9 and 10 or 10 and 11 in the first round. And I figured out a way to swap those two picks to go up to 3 to get Sean Springs and 6 to get Walter Jones in the same draft. So that was probably something I'll always be proud of. I think Walter Jones, by most standards, is maybe the best lineman to ever play. And Sean Springs was a Pro Bowl corner, and we got both those guys in one draft. And, you know, I guess that would be rivaled with my first year in New Orleans when they were still wearing bags, and we turned their franchise around, really, and won our first playoff game in my first season there with Jim Haslett as the head coach. So those were fun times, that's for sure.
Can you tell me more about the Meyer trade? How did you trade Meyer for a first-round pick? How'd you do that?
Well, I think he was highly thought of coming out of Notre Dame. When they drafted him in Seattle, I really wasn't in charge. And that was the same year that Drew Bledsoe was picked at the top of the draft by the Patriots. So we picked Rick Meyer second. And Rick's skill set just didn't match up with Dennis Erickson's passing offense. And so we kind of about halfway through that season, what was Rick's last, just decided we're going to have to do something. I think the fact that Rick was well thought of, he was a Notre Dame guy, that meant something to the Chicago people. You know, Ted is still there, Ted Phillips. And I remember meeting with them early on in the process, and there seemed to be interest. They were struggling to find a quarterback. We kind of had John Kitten on the shelf in Seattle, so we knew we had a guy that eventually we wanted to play. And it just worked out to where it was kind of the perfect storm. You know, it was the Notre Dame factor, the Rick Meyer aura, and I think it was a good fit for Chicago, and it was just time that it expired for us in Seattle. So one of those deals that just comes together. There wasn't a lot of other teams involved, And so it wasn't like I was leveraging a deal somewhere else. It just happened, and we were fortunate enough to make it work, and the rest is history.
Let me ask you this. What's the one trade you most regret doing?
Oh, boy. I've been pretty lucky throughout my career to not have made too many mistakes. I regret a couple unrestricted free agent signings where we overpaid and early in the free agent years. That was always an issue. I traded Eugene Robinson, the safety in Seattle, to Green Bay for Matt Labounty, a defensive end who probably neither one of you fans even remember these guys. But Eugene Robinson was fairly iconic in Seattle days. He went on to play for the Carolina Panthers and play in a Super Bowl. He was a really good player for us. I'm not sure that was smart on my end. I mean, it worked out fine. We got a nice role player in Matt Labounty back from the Packers. But that was one where we probably gave more than we got, especially when you consider the intangibles and all the leadership that Eugene had brought to us. So that was a tough one. Plus, he was well-liked. I have some regret on that one.
And Randy, before we finish up today, last question. What's the most challenging part of being an NFL GM?
I think people that hire GMs nowadays think they're hiring somebody to sit in a room and pick players. The most challenging thing is you're the communicator to everybody in the building and outside the building. So you have a lot on your plate. I always say, hey, I used to tell my assistant, try to carve out 1 hour that I can watch film today. So that's the hardest thing people don't understand. In fact, young GMs now that get jobs, when I do talk to them, they always say, give me some advice. And I say, you got to find time still to do what you do. And that's to evaluate talent. Finding time to watch tape. I'll bet if you went in Ryan Pace's office, he'd say, man, I just need some time to look at film. That's what got us into these jobs. And it seems like that's the hardest thing to hang on to once you get these jobs is that time. And you have a line outside your door in a lot of days and you never get to watch film. I remember coming home many nights and saying, what did I accomplish today? You're the communicator and communicating's hard and it takes time. So that's the biggest thing is these guys that have GM jobs now, it's not like you're a scout anymore. You just can't occupy your time watching tape. It's hard. You got to depend on others.
Well, Randy, thank you so much for joining me. Great insights. And I hope we could stay in touch and do this again soon. Best wishes too with all of your endeavors, the CEO of MuellerFootball.com and the host of the Football GM podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. I enjoyed it. Anytime.
Great talk there with Randy Mueller. And that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Randy Mueller himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalbin, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No!
Never the turtle!